kwenenzverwa.
Tasvika kumagumo echirongwa chedu. Ndini Jonga Kandemiri ndiri muWashington DC.
Thank you, Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, June the 24th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sithandekile Mhlanga.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Hundreds of street vendors marched in Harare today and petitioned the parliament over the government's plan to relocate them to designated vending sites.
This eviction, what it means literally is that we are going to die. Because evicting us from the streets means our livelihoods would have stopped from that moment.
Zimbabwe is under the spotlight today in Washington, D.C., where various stakeholders are discussing economic and political problems in the country.
We don't provide direct support to the government of Zimbabwe, but we remain steadfast in our commitment to the people of Zimbabwe.
And former Information Minister Jonathan Moyo, who left his cabinet post yesterday on a technicality after securing an elective parliamentary seat in the recent by-elections, remained silent on his future today.
These stories and much, much more coming up.
Hundreds of street vendors marched in Harare today despite police attempts to block them and petitioned the parliament over the government's plan to relocate them to designated vending sites. Our correspondent Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
More than 300 placard-carrying street vendors gathered along Resende Street near town now, demanding that the government should extend its June 26 deadline to relocate them to designated vending sites, arguing that the government's plan is not feasible. As the protesters reached the corner of Julius Nyerere Way and Nelson Mandela Avenue, heavily armed police details formed a human shield, blocking the protesters from proceeding to parliament, where they intended to hand over their petition. After more than an hour of negotiations between police and the leaders of the protest, the two groups agreed to allow only four vendors to proceed to the August House to submit their petition that was later handed to acting clerk of parliament, Nomason Tosunga. One of the leaders of the demonstrators, Justice Munyai, board secretary of the National Vendors Union of Zimbabwe, or NAVUZ, told the demonstrators that vending was the only source of their livelihood and vowed not to relocate to any other sites that are being proposed by government, saying they were not enough to accommodate all the vendors.
This eviction, what it means literally is that we are going to die. Because evicting us from the streets means our livelihoods would have stopped from that moment. Our livelihoods emanate from the day-to-day sales we make in the streets. And my living is not lucrative. I live from hand to mouth. So, if for only 24 hours I'm stopped from operating in the CBD, it means that I will not be able to provide for my family.
Munai added that the vending sites that have been designated by government were being run by what he called space barons that he claims are politically connected. The NAVUZ leader said authorities should address the economic challenges facing the country that are forcing many people to turn to informal trading.
The petition is imploring the government to come to terms with the fact that our economy is ailing. And since our economy is ailing, removing the symptoms or taking away by whatever force they can, the symptoms of this ailing economy will not solve the problem.
Movement for Democratic Change Member of Parliament for Bulawayo East, Tabitha Kumalo, who joined the demonstrators, said the ZANU-PF government should deliver on its election promises if it were to address the unemployment crisis that is resulting in many Zimbabweans turning into vending in order to eke out a living.
What we are saying is Zimbabweans. The ZANU-PF government promised 2.2 million jobs to the Zimbabwean people. And those jobs are not there. If they want these vendors off the streets, bring the 2.2 million jobs.
When the four vendors that included Munai returned from parliament, where they submitted their petition, the rest of their colleagues had forced their way past the police barricade and were following Munai and others to the Augusta House, only to be stopped by the law enforcement agents at the intersection of Nelson Mandela and Sam Nujoma Street. The protesters then agreed to disperse after learning that their petition had been delivered at parliament. The acting Speaker of Parliament said she will forward the petition to the relevant authorities for actioning. Today's demonstrations were given a go-ahead yesterday by the High Court after police backtracked on their earlier promise to monitor the protesters. Meanwhile, the Zimbabwe Informal Sector Organization also petitioned local government minister Ignatius Chombo, calling on government to abandon its planned evictions of the street vendors and engage all stakeholders in order to find common ground. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Zimbabwe is under the spotlight today in Washington, D.C., where various stakeholders are discussing economic and political problems in the country. The National Endowment for Democracy is hosting U.S. Ambassador to Zimbabwe Bruce Wharton, Ipo Mandaza of the Southern African Political Economy Series, businessman Shingi Munyeza, and Imani Counters, the director of the Africa Program at the Solidarity Center. Studio 7's Chris Gandhi is covering the event. He speaks with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube.
Hello, Chris.
Hello, Dube.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
Good. Tell us, what is going on at that meeting?
Yeah, we had the speakers, and one of them, Ibo Mandaza, mentioned the National Convergence Convention, which he says is going to take part in August. And this convention is a platform that is going to promote dialogue of Zimbabweans across the social spectrum who are invited in their individual capacity. And this is hoped to come up with solutions to both the economic and the political situation, so he says.
What about the Ambassador Wharton? What did he say there?
Ambassador Wharton was also optimistic about Zimbabwe's future. Of course, he did mention that the United States is eager to engage Zimbabwe, but the only drawback, he says, is the human rights situation and the other things that they have put forward as a prerequisite for re-engagement.
Now, we had some businessmen like Mr. Shingi Munyeza. What did they tell that meeting?
Actually, Mr. Msipa didn't turn up, but Shingi Munyeza was here, and he gave also a very optimistic picture. He painted an optimistic picture about Zimbabwe, and he says that there is a lot of hope for Zimbabwe, because comparing Zimbabwe to other African countries, like West African countries, Zimbabwe is on a better standing. The infrastructure is there, the institutions are still there, and it's a matter of putting the act together, which is the political act.
Thank you so much, Chris Gandhi. But do you think that there are any solutions that may be implemented from that kind of meeting?
There is certainly some hope, because we understand, according to Mr. Mandaza, that they have set up a $10 billion fund that is aimed at, relieving the economic stress that the country is facing.
That was Studio 7's Chris Gandhi. Meanwhile, U.S. Ambassador to Zimbabwe Bruce Wharton told the same meeting that America, which imposed sanctions on President Robert Mugabe and his inner circle, has not yet shifted its policy towards Zimbabwe.
We don't provide direct support to the government of Zimbabwe, but we remain steadfast in our commitment to the people of Zimbabwe. Concluding, the point I'd like to make here is simply that Zimbabwe is powerful. Zimbabwe has agency. Zimbabwe is capable. Only Zimbabweans can affect the changes that they want in their country to build the future that they want. The United States will support those ambitions, the people of goodwill in Zimbabwe who share our values in terms of strong democratic institutions, strong support for human rights, strong support for the rule of law. We will be there to support those things. But in essence, the future of Zimbabwe is in the hands of the people of Zimbabwe, and I remain doggedly optimistic that the future is bright.
That was Bruce Wharton, U.S. Ambassador to Zimbabwe. He will give you more details of this event tomorrow. Don't miss it.
In a related issue, the Zimbabwe Democracy Institute, or ZDI, has criticized opposition parties and civil society for failing to demand tangible reforms to the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, or ZEC, secretariat ahead of the 2018 elections. ZDI claims that ZEC is manned mostly by former agents of the country's spy network, the Central Intelligence Organization, or CIO. In a press statement, the local think tank also took a swipe at the way ZEC conducted the recent Urungwe West by-election, which it says points to the duplicity and complicity of the Electoral Co-Management Body and ZANU-PF in the conduction of elections in Zimbabwe. Legal experts and opposition parties are condemning ZEC for declaring ZANU-PF candidate Keith Guza the winner in Urungwe West, though he was not properly registered. ZDI said institutions such as the Electoral Commission ought to be independent, competent, and perceived as completely fair by all the candidates and parties participating in the electoral process. ZDI Director Petsai Ruhanya tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that Urungwe is blight on ZEC's record.
The Secretariat of ZEC is staffed with the members from the present office, members from the military. And because of the partisan nature of these members in the Secretariat of ZEC, they are not able to discharge an impartial, professional job as ZEC officials because they bid for them. That is our concern. You can look at the chief elections officer is called Constance Chibamba. Before she became the chief elections officer 2 weeks ago, she was a permanent secretary in the office of the president and cabinet. That house is the Central Intelligence Organization. But this has been the trend. Her predecessor, Mr. Love Mose Keremai Delete, was a deputy director in the office of the president and cabinet. Keremai's predecessor was one brigadier general, now major general, Douglas Nikairamba, who is a serving member of the military. We also have another person who's called the Director of Logistics, responsible for running the elections, called Utoile Slaibana, who was with the Army Military Education Corps. So you can see the militarization of ZEC.
So what is the way forward now, Dr. Roy?
I think the way forward is the opposition and the democratic forces are serious. They must demand a forensic audit of the Secretariat of ZEC. And those that have been associated with the failed and contested violent election like the June 2008 election, like Madame Joyce Kasembe and the Theophilus Gang, must resign.
That was ZDI Director Petsai Ruhanya speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Former Information Minister Jonathan Moyo, who left his cabinet post yesterday on a technicality after securing an elective parliamentary seat in the recent by-elections, remained silent on his future today, despite several inquiries by his Twitter followers and the press. Moyo was appointed to the post by President Mugabe as a non-constituency lawmaker in 2013, but his victory in the June 10 by-elections made him ineligible to continue serving, legal experts say. Now, Moyo is hoping for a new mandate, but it remains unclear whether President Mugabe will reappoint or redeploy him elsewhere. Analysts say given the factional fighting in ZANU-PF, Moyo's future as information minister remains uncertain. There has not been any official statement on this matter.
Zimbabwe will in December host the 2015 International Conference on AIDS and Sexually Transmitted Infections in Africa, or ICASA, after winning the continental bid yesterday, a move the National AIDS Council says will put the country on the spotlight in the fight against HIV/AIDS. According to the state-controlled Herald newspaper, ICASA's president, Dr. Ihab Ahmed, made the announcement in Harare yesterday after several meetings with stakeholders. Zimbabwe's bid came after expected host country Tunisia failed to meet requirements. The conference will be held at the Harare International Conference Center from November 29th to December 4. National AIDS Council Operations Director Raymond Yekeye tells Studio 7 Statenda Gumbo Zimbabwe is prepared to host Africa's largest AIDS conference.
This is something that we had not thought about, not in our wildest dreams. We had thought this would be happening in Tunisia, and a number of our colleagues were preparing to go to Tunisia for the conference. However, when the opportunity came, and when the team came into us as Zimbabwe, I think as a country, we prepared hard.
How important will it be to have this conference on the ground in Zimbabwe?
Conference actually provides us an opportunity to showcase the good work that we have done as a country, but also as a region, and maybe also as a continent.
What are some of the challenges that you are facing in Zimbabwe that have been of importance for you as an organization to deal with directly?
I think what I can say is that we have recorded significant progress in responding to HIV over the years. And I think all indications are there. We have over 800,000 people currently accessing treatment. Our HIV prevalence has declined by more than half, 50%. And new infections have also continued to decline. And I think we have achieved almost half, reducing the new infections by about 50%. However, when we look at our figures, the declines that we've enjoyed over the years don't seem to be happening as fast as we would have loved them to happen, as was the case in the previous years. What we're seeing now is that we are seeing sort of stabilization of new infections, which is a cause of concern. We are also worried about the age groups, especially new cases in young people.
That was National AIDS Council Operations Director Raymond Yekeye speaking to Studio 7 Statenda Gumbo from Harare.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency. Coming up,
Zimbabweans living in America team up to take care of colleagues back home.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
France is sending its intelligence coordinator to Washington following allegations by the whistleblowing website WikiLeaks that the U.S. spied on the France's last three leaders, including current President Francois Hollande.
The U.S. government will no longer threaten to prosecute families who try to negotiate with the captors of Americans being held hostage overseas or pay ransom to win their release, U.S. media reports said. President Barack Obama is expected to soften a U.S. policy when he releases a broad review of U.S. hostage guidelines Wednesday at the White House alongside several hostage families.
And insults flew in South Africa's parliament yesterday as members debated the government's decision not to arrest Sudan's president on an international genocide warrant during his recent visit.
Zimbabweans send home more than $1 billion a year in diaspora remittances, yet they don't vote or have any say in political processes in the Southern African nation that has been ruled for more than 35 years by President Robert Mugabe's ZANU-PF party. In an attempt to harness ideas from Zimbabweans living in the U.S., the Zimbabwe Diaspora Network North America, or ZDNNA, which was formed in 2012, last weekend launched its chapter for people residing in Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Though the turnout was very low, the conveners hope many Zimbabweans living in the U.S. will come aboard, as Chris Kande reports.
Some Zimbabweans living in the U.S. have become citizens of their host country, assimilating into the American culture and society. However, according to one of the speakers at the launch of the ZDNA chapter, Portia Kandemiri, Zimbabweans will always be what they are, Zimbabweans.
We stay in America. Our roots are back at home. They also say that it doesn't matter how long a log stays in the river. It will never be a crocodile.
A ZDNA board member, Tsitsi Madzongwe, says the similarities of culture among members is one of the cornerstones of the organization that seeks to unite Zimbabweans living in the U.S.
A chapter like this, we have a lot of connections. We have a lot of resources. The ZDNA regional chapter can empower you as a person and as a community to reach whatever goals you want to accomplish.
ZDNA President Isao Mavindidze believes that many African countries in the diaspora already have such platforms, and Zimbabwe is lagging behind.
We are latecomers again to this. We have not really engaged in a meaningful way with individuals or groups from the diaspora. But the good thing is, I think there's a growing realization of the importance of non-resident Zimbabweans who are abroad. Our situation is also a bit unique, given that nearly a third of the Zimbabwean population now dwells outside Zimbabwe.
The chapter coordinator, Isaac Mwase, says the organization will always benefit those at home.
So we come today as a result of these efforts for the Zimbabwean community to have an organization that is broad-based and that can create the structures where Zimbabweans can begin to carry on activities that are going to advance their welfare and the welfare of those at home.
Simba Maziwisa, a young Zimbabwean who grew up in the U.S., says it's difficult for people like him to claim both the U.S. and Zimbabwe as their home.
We live in a world where people like myself are in perhaps a last generation, where we left Zimbabwe when we were fairly young and we came to America. We've been in America so long that we don't fit perfectly back home anymore, but we don't fit here perfectly either, just because obviously we're immigrants. And sometimes you need the guidance and advice of other people that are in the community that have been through some of those steps that can show you the right path. And, you know, kids don't get lost or stay lost. Emergencies happen at any time. Right now, we're dealing with a situation in South Carolina where there was trouble at a church, people got shot. If anything like that ever happened in our community, right now we have nothing to go on, nothing to go by. Everybody deals with emergencies as they happen, just in their own little world, in their secluded world, and they hope that they have friends around them that can support them. One of our aims is to formalize that support group.
Although it's not officially known how many Zimbabweans are living in the U.S., some estimates say there could be a couple of thousands. And as the economic situation back home continues to deteriorate, hundreds more Zimbabweans are expected to flock to the U.S. Reporting for Studio 7, this is Chris Gande in Washington, D.C.
Health Minister Dr. David Parirenyatwa today officially opened a clinic in Luche Ngayi, Matabelele North, where he commended the Free Presbyterian Church of Scotland for taking an initiative in building the health facility in an area facing a shortage of clinics. Ngayi South Member of Parliament Abednego Bebe says the minister acknowledged that Ngayi has a lower number of clinics compared to other districts in the country, while he applauded the role played by the local community in building the clinic.
they provided the financial assistance to buy that material that is required to build the hospital, like the cement, the roofing material, et cetera, and the painting. Some of the material, like pit sand and any other general labor that is required, was provided by the community. In particular, myself as the MP, I have been encouraging the community, as I have done it with classroom blocks in about five schools. So we've been doing it. We provide free labor because at the end of the day, clinic or that school will be ours. We have got 30 wards, and according to the recommendation from the Minister of Health, at least each ward should have. So we've got 30 wards, but out of the 30 wards, we've got only 7 clinics. And the one that we've been opening today will be the 8th one. So we're still short of 22 clinics. So this, to us, is actually the best that has happened so far.
What important remarks were made by the health minister?
One thing that I picked was he realized that we are lagging behind, and either government or any other donor can provide the same. And he appreciated the role of the church in assisting the communities. He was very thankful to the donors who donated material to build the clinic.
That was Apetineko Pepe, Ngai Member of Parliament, on the line with Studio 7 from Ngai.
A power sales retail shop in Gwanda was this evening gutted by fire, whose origin remains a subject of speculation and police investigation. Witnesses from the small town in Matabeleland South Province told Studio 7 the fire started just after 6 p.m. and a while ago the ill-equipped fire brigade was still battling to put out the flames. The witnesses said property worth thousands and thousands of dollars was destroyed.
Now, here is an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
The most important document in British history celebrates its 800th birthday this month, one being marked in our nation, too, for providing a foundation for our government and liberties. In a meadow by the Thames River near London on June 15th, in the year 1215, the English King John sued for peace with a group of rebellious nobles by attaching his royal seal to a Great Charter of Liberties, better known by its title in Latin, the Magna Carta. By most accounts, John was a horrible monarch. He imposed heavy taxes, far higher than those of kings before him. When someone couldn't pay, he took their sons hostage. Those suspected of disloyalty were executed without trial. For interfering with affairs of the church, he was excommunicated. Powerless in the face of open rebellion, and anxious to save his throne, John conceded to a list of 63 grievances, and promised from then on to obey the law of the land. Future kings would be bound by the charter as well, he pledged. Many of its provisions are irrelevant today, dealing as they do with such things as feudal laws regarding rents and inheritance, but with its implication that the head of state is subject to the rule of law, and the declaration that all people have a right to a fair trial if accused of a crime, the Magna Carta has become a symbol of liberty, individual freedoms, and the rule of law around the world. Some 4 centuries later, when English colonists left for the New World, they brought royal charters that established their colonies, each couched with the guarantees of rights and liberties implied by the Magna Carta. And later, when the colonists fought for independence from Britain, they were fighting not so much for rights unknown, but to preserve those rights and liberties now laid out in our Constitution. Magna Carta still forms an important symbol of liberty today. It is the foundation of freedom of the individual against arbitrary authority, and the notion that no one, not even a king, is above the law.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts Blessing Zulu and Gibbs Dube will be talking with listeners and experts about challenges faced by vendors in Zimbabwe.
To join the discussion, text us at 001202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios.
Now to recap today's top stories.
Hundreds of street vendors marched in Harare today and petitioned parliament over the government's plan to relocate them to designated vending sites.
Zimbabwe is under the spotlight today in Washington, D.C., where various stakeholders are discussing economic and political problems in the country.
And former Information Minister Jonathan Moyo, who left his cabinet post yesterday on a technicality after securing an elective parliamentary seat in the recent by-elections, remained silent on his future today.
That's our broadcast this evening.
Thank you for joining us. This is Sithandekile Mhlanga in Washington.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.